It is hour number two of 3D, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe and Joe Rexroad live at the Jack Daniels Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Predators, Coyotes on the ice tonight. Darren will have pregame starting at 6. Pete Weber, Hal Gill will have the call around 7 o'clock as well as these two teams meet. Preds coming off a 1-0 win over the Vegas Golden Knights on Tuesday, and they are here all week long. Florida Panthers in town Saturday night at Bridgestone Arena, so it's a good time to come out. We put the question out on Twitter of the grade that you would give John Robinson. And it's funny trying to read through all of these, the mixed reviews, you know, that we kind of have. Jeremiah says Nashville as a city is behind him. He has supported us and brought us back from being in the slums with the Browns. He's helped change the attitude of this city with the Predators, and it has been great. So that, you know, I think is encouraging. You know, it seems to be supportive of John Robinson. A lot of people talk about the attitude that he has brought to the team, and that he's kind of changed that attitude. And I would agree with that. I think the culture has definitely changed.
I agree. I also would have to give Mike Mularkey some credit for the same thing.
Agreed.
And, but you know, Mike Mularkey has moved on. So, but I think, again, I think that those two guys, it did not feel to me like a forced marriage early. Really, for most of the time. Most of the last 2 years, not at all. These guys are out there, like, fishing together and stuff. I think they worked together really well in building the roster. I don't think this was just like, hey, Mike, here's your players. You know, they're in that room together talking. I think they had a good relationship. Probably as good as you can expect for that kind of arrangement.
Well,
But you know, now, of course, John has made the bold move to get rid of him.
And that's my question for you. When I look at the players that John Robinson brought in, because he's the guy that goes shopping, right? Mike Mularkey's going to have some input. The head coach should have some input. The guys had David Poile on at Barrel House on Tuesday, and he was asked, you know, kind of about making changes and how difficult of a decision that is. And one thing that David said, and Darren Willey discussed this yesterday, was, you know, I have to look at who my head coach is, and I go out and I get players that fit that head coach. And I think you see that in any sport, that you're going to get the players that fit the system. So my question for you is, when you look at all the acquisitions that John Robinson made over the 2 years that Mike Mularkey was the head coach, do you think that the players that he signed and drafted truly fit what Mike Mularkey wanted to do?
Yeah, I mean, I actually asked John this question Monday. You know, I basically asked, like, is it fair to say that you've been building this roster with Mike's system? You know, and he kind of downplayed that and said, look, you know, you draft players, you believe they can play in any system. And I think that's true to a large extent, but I would look at a pick like Derrick Henry and say that's probably with the idea of a power running game. Even a Corey Davis, you know, big physical receiver. Now, big physical receiver who's great works anywhere. So, you know, I guess that one could probably, if he's what they hope he is, it could work anywhere. Jack Conklin, to me, is a, you know, big physical, strong offensive tackle. Again, we've seen Jack Conklin. He's good. He's good at pass pro, too. He's an all-around really good player. But that still seems to be a pick with that kind of approach in mind. So, yeah, I do think that a lot of these picks seem to be fitting this system. We just mentioned Taywan Taylor. There's an example of maybe a little bit of a departure, you know, from that idea as a wide receiver who's not the big physical guy, but that also shows you no matter what your system is, you know, Mike Mularkey may be and they may have believed in the power or slow offense. They ran the jet sweeps. They ran the read option stuff. They had some RPOs in the playbook too. It's not all one thing. It's not all 3 yards in a cloud of dust.
Well, and I think also he's always going to get a pass because he didn't draft Marcus Mariota. So he can always say that, you know, and everybody's going to tell you, well, you got to build your system, your team around your quarterback, because that's the guy that's got to run it anyway. So that's going to be the million-dollar question of whoever this new guy is. If you hire an offensive coach, does his offensive scheme play to Marcus? And John Robinson is clearly going to factor that in. If If you hire a defensive coach, is the offensive coordinator that he brings in going to have an offense that works for Marcus? And that goes back to something we talked about the other day. That's where I think Marcus is going to have to do a better job and say, hey, this is what I'm comfortable with. This is what works for me. You know, I'll do what you need me to do. But if we can kind of make this work, that would really be helpful to me.
Yeah, I agree. They need to get his input. He needs to be honest. But I think back, Chase, to the 2016 draft, which is shortly after I got this job, and there was a lot of talk from the organization about and outside, a lot of talk about is this best for Marcus? And the talk from the Titans was, if you can run the ball and you can freeze the linebackers and you can protect your quarterback and set up play action passing, a quarterback will do well with that.
Right.
And look at the 2016 season. After a slow start, that's exactly what happened. The offense worked beautifully for a good stretch there. They were dynamic. With all these same people that just got fired because they have no imagination and don't have a clue what they're doing, this quarterback was terrific. This offense was great. They lost some games because the defense couldn't get stops, like at San Diego, for example. Just shootout loss, but they just lit up the Packers. You know, they went to Kansas City. They played some grinders, but that offense was prolific for a good chunk of that season. So that's where, when we talk about what fits a quarterback, I still think there are some basic things that can always work for you. Can your receivers get open? Do you have a running game? Does your offensive line protect you? I think sometimes too much is made of scheme and not enough of, you know, it's the Jimmys and Joes and the X's and O's discussion. And I do think that this year some of the Jimmys and Joes were not up to par. And
I agree.
They took a step back from last year. But it's all one big puzzle. It's not one thing. It's all of it.
Well, and two, you know, people – like I've read a lot of things around the league and people talking about this job. And we had Ian Rappaport on, and he said he believes, you know, it is a good job and one of the better jobs in the league because of the roster. Everybody says there's a lot of talent on this roster. I don't disagree with that. But the thing is, do you know how to use it? And when you look at Marcus as the quarterback and as the field general, the old cliche, does he know how to use all the weapons that he has? We see him, you know, he loves the check down. He finds Delanie Walker. He can hand the ball off to one of his running backs. There has been miscommunication at times between Marcus and the wide receivers, whether he's overthrowing or they're running the wrong route. That's on both sides. But the thing now is you go into year four and you can make the excuses that he's been injured, and you can look at this as maybe it's year three development wise, however you want to look at it, that's fine. But at some point he has to learn how to use all these weapons that he has.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, a lot of this is, and the thing is, we're talking about grading John Robinson and then whoever the coach is going to be that, but we are still in the phase of figuring out Marcus and what he is, what his ceiling is, and are you ready to hitch the wagon to him and sign him to that huge long-term deal? I mean, it's still like right now I would say yes. I mean, we're heading that way, but next year is going to dictate a lot of that too. And so it's not just Robinson and the coach who are, you know, under scrutiny right now. We're still trying to figure out exactly what Marcus Mariota is, and it is tough this year to look at everything. I think that he started forcing the ball at one point in the season because they were struggling to get anything going, and I think he stepped outside of himself a little bit for a stretch of the season, which affects his bottom line. I've said this all along, and I'll keep saying it, watching him play after play, game after game, I wasn't sitting there saying, man, this guy's really taking a step back as a quarterback. You know, I mean, what do you have, five game-winning drives?
Yeah.
He made clutch plays. When he was not able to get out of that pocket and be a threat because he was hurt, and also because I think they stopped doing that as much to keep him from getting more hurt, that hurt his game. And that to me is the biggest question with Marcus Mariota is whether you believe that you need to max protect for him all the time or that he just needs to get rid of the ball fast, whatever it is, can he stay healthy for a whole season? Can he stay healthy and be what he is at full capacity, a dual threat quarterback in the NFL? Because I think he has to be great.
That's the number one question. And that's one that we have not been able to answer in his 3 years in the league of can he stay healthy? I mean, look, what he brings, his athleticism, how he uses his legs, I think is a huge part of his game, and it's a huge part of this offense, and it's part of what makes him good and what he is. But at the same time, there's a trade-off. He's going to get banged up. How long can he last in the league because of that physical style of play that he has? And can a new head coach or a new OC or a combination of the two find that balance and work with him on how he can better protect himself? He still doesn't know how to slide. Like, that guy has the worst slide I think I've ever seen of any quarterback. He still doesn't know how to do that.
I think sometimes it's good. But, yeah, sometimes he kind of gets caught in between. I mean, he got hurt on a half-slide-ish thing in Arizona. I mean, that got I believe that was a knee that got banged up and affected him the next week at San Francisco. So sometimes I feel like he knows how to do it. Like, sometimes it's like, you know, looks like a baseball player. But you're right. There are times when he's sort of uncertain if he should slide or not. And the answer is probably just yes every time.
Yeah, and, you know, there's also times I've heard coaches say this, like, hey, if it's not there, throw it away, or at worst, take the sack.
Yeah.
And he wants to make a play every time. He's one of those guys that I think that's just how he's built. Like,
yes.
I have to make a play. Like, I it's a failure if I don't. And sometimes, you know, you just have to – you have to take the miss.
Yeah,
and
no, I agree.
He's got to be willing to do that.
Yeah, I agree. Like, you know, quarterback's coach Jason Michael was talking before this past season about, you know, I was just asking, like, so if you had to pick out some of the best moments of Marcus from last year, and he came up with at Chicago when he just threw it away three straight times, and they kicked a field goal. And he just, boom, nothing, go. Throw it away, boom, okay, kick a field goal. Like, that, they were like, that's what we're talking about, baby. Do that, you know. So, yeah, he's still – but I do think he's got some Favre in him, you know, some run around and make something happen. And I think he may not be Tom Brady, but if there's something you can take from this last weekend, look what the Pats did. I mean, in that game, how many throws did Tom Brady make where you're like, ooh, Tom Brady, laser? It was just dump to the back, screen, little dink. And then, okay, here's one to Gronk. You know, here's one to Cooks. He made the one play thrown across his body, you know, that was like one of those, ooh, Brady iconic plays. But for the most part, it was just like, we're just going to keep dumping to our backs and get 3-4 yards, and then they're going to break a tackle and get 15 yards. And you start dealing with that, and then you have to pay more attention to that, and then we hit you downfield a little more. I think Marcus – and that's where the argument for, like, a little bit more of a wide open, more 3 and 4 wide sets, let Marcus read things and make quick decisions. Because, I mean, that – you know, the Titans had a lot of max protect stuff and you know, routes with two guys going out. And right. I get that, but if you get rid of the ball fast, that also will keep you from getting hit.
Chase McCabe, Joe Rexroad here with you from the Jack Daniels Barrel House on 3D. Talking Titans, talking
Kara Hammer.
Search. Kara Hammer in the house, getting ready for Preds and Coyotes later tonight. So – That's going to be – when you look at Tom Brady, what you were just saying, the dink and dunk stuff, and then he'll open it up if he needs to. I'm one of those people that I have never had a problem with dink and dunk because it's effective.
Yeah.
And if you
it's
know
so frustrating for defenses.
Right, because you don't know how to defend it. You don't know how to read it. And then it sets up when you kind of get into that rhythm and you think, all right, here we go. He's going to – you know, they're going to do short yardage stuff. Well, then all of a sudden it's wide open and Brady can throw – you know, a 20 to 25 yard pass and set it up for another score or score a touchdown. So I think that if you can get to that point with this offense and with Marcus Mariota where he gets his confidence, that helps build up his confidence in himself because you're completing passes, you're moving down the field, and then you set up the big play, and then it's going to make it tougher for defenses to figure out exactly what he's going to do because at that point he's not running every time. When there's a breakdown, he's not rolling out. And you can save that stuff for when you actually need it.
Yeah, and Darren brought up yesterday, or a couple days ago, you know, Alvin Kamara as a model of, man, everybody wants that guy now. You know, the Saints.
They should.
Big New Orleans Saints fan, Adam Vingan in the house right now. He knows well what Alvin did as a rookie. And that'll be interesting, too, because, you know, DeMarco Murray, they didn't throw to the backs a ton, but DeMarco Murray had some really big catches in the past couple seasons. He was really good at it. You know, he went out and he could turn a linebacker around no problem. Obviously, he had the game-winning little catch and dive in the end zone against the Bengals. He had a huge one against the Colts this year that basically sealed that game, which was a great Terry Robiskie call, by the way. One of the few times in the Mularkey era that they didn't go predictable on third and one or third and two and get stuffed. They actually went play action, threw to the back, got the first down. He's an asset in that way. I don't know if Derrick Henry, you know, can approach what DeMarco Murray has been as a pass receiver. So, again, that would then bring up the need for higher than like fifth or sixth round to go get one of those kind of guys. And no one's coming to my mind right now, but a guy like that as a compliment, if it's going to be Henry and Younger and Murray's gone. We don't know that for sure, but I think there's certainly the possibility of that.
They got to find that Darren Sproles, Danny Woodhead type of back.
There you go.
And that, now I'm not saying those guys, because I think their time has passed, but yeah, they need to find that type. Alvin Kamara, you know, maybe a John Kelly. You know, maybe John Kelly is that type of guy.
That's interesting.
From Tennessee. So I think you have to look at that. And then if you have all three facets with a running back, if you have the big bruiser, if you have a speed guy, if you have that change of pace, guy that can catch the ball out of the backfield, then you're adding a completely different element to this offense that I think is going to be very beneficial to Marcus.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's just a big puzzle, and it's just never simple. It's just not one thing. It wasn't one thing this year. But I think Marcus Mariota, I reject the idea that there's one offense that you have to fit him or really to fit any quarterback. I think if you have good personnel around them and good planning and you coaches can diagnose your opponent and self-scout and put together a plan, and that's where I think the Titans definitely failed from a coaching perspective this year. I mean, I look at that Arizona game, and it looked like they didn't prepare for that game at all.
Right.
And that was, and I think that was kind of the beginning of the end for Mularkey. And that is where I think all criticisms are fair for Robiskie, Mularkey, some of their predictability, and San Fran. You know, you get stuffed in that third and two. You throw it there, and there's no way Garoppolo has the ball to come back late. But the scheme, like this offense, can't possibly work. I don't buy that.
Yeah,
sorry.
Marcus is a smart guy. I think he can figure it out. He's Joe Rexroad. I am Chase McCabe. Darren McFarland is going to rejoin the show when we come back, and they will also catch up with Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated. Stick around. More 3D next. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Back here at Bridgestone Arena, Jack Daniels Barrel House. Tonight's the Predators and the Arizona Coyotes. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6 right here on 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Joe Rexroad, columnist for the Tennessean, alongside Willie Donick, will join us a little bit later in the show. In fact, a little bit later, third hour, we will head to Houston. Mike Vrabel is set to interview for the Titans head coaching position today, defensive coordinator for the Texans. So we'll find out a little bit more about Mike Vrabel in the third hour of the program. Richard Deitch, Sports Illustrated, author of The Media Circus, on the line with us. Richard, how you doing?
What's up? How are you guys?
Doing wonderful. A little cold here, a little nippy in Nashville, but, you know, it is January. We'll adjust. It looks like
Did it snow in Nashville? Or
it did.
Cold?
Yes.
It did.
School's been off all week.
All week for
3 inches.
You guys okay? You want me to send milk and shovels? Are you okay?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that there is any more milk at the grocery store. Milk and bread seem to
disappear. I will say this. You know, obviously, whenever snow happens in the South or, Southeast, you know, see all these stories and sort of this people in the Northeast who are like, you know, always mocking like the South. You know, you guys are scared, blah blah blah. But, like, I've lived in New York City for the last 20 years. Trust me. When, like, big snowstorms come to, you go to, like, the local supermarket or bodega, there's, like, no milk here either. So, you know, trust me on that. You guys aren't the only ones who are doing that.
Thank you for saying
Richard,
that.
Richard, setting the record straight. I love it. Yeah. Good start. So it looks like Thursday Night Football may be switching networks. So that seems to be the vibe, and I don't know if ABC and ESPN is the front runners. Where is that headed?
That's a good question. The person who's really been on top of the reporting here is John Olrand, Sports Business Daily. So all props to him. And he reported that, you know, ESPN /ABC is very serious about making a bid for Thursday Night Football, which would really be interesting if they ended up getting it. Just one, it has to change the ABC schedule, and two, would give ESPN two nights of the week where they do NFL football. And, you know, there was some talk, or I guess it was kicked around not too long ago, the idea of maybe ESPN getting away from the NFL, but I mean, this would obviously be the exact counter. They'd be more involved in the NFL. Their Monday night schedule is never very good, so this, I guess, would be a little bit of a buttress against that. So that's interesting. I still expect NBC and CBS to bid. They may lowball is probably not the right word. They may bid less than they bid the last time, although, as a general rule, you should always bet on television networks bidding more for rights than you think, because they're always fearful of somebody else getting those rights. Is it possible Turner or Fox can get involved? Definitely. I certainly read the other day about Fox kicking around the idea of maybe putting the game on Fox, maybe having some of the stuff on FS1 as well. And then, of course, you still have your digital players like the Amazons and the Twitters of the world. So it's interesting. I would not be surprised if Thursday Night Football changes hands in some form. The only thing I think the NFL will be consistent, because they've been consistent throughout here, is they want that game on national television, or I should say over-the-air television. So I don't think you're going to see the Thursday Night Football game, at least the first part of the schedule, on ESPN only. You know, you may still see the back end of that on the NFL Network and ESPN type, but ABC, if ESPN gets it, it's going to have that. Fox is going to get that game if they get that. You know, NBC or CBS. That's the one thing I think the NFL still remains clear on, is they want their product on over-the-air television. But, you know, just when you think you're reading all these stories, these narratives about the NFL dead, ratings are down, blah, 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 look how many people still want to bid on this product. Yeah. So I would just be cautious when you read people who are telling you that the NFL is in all sorts of financial trouble, because it's usually not the case.
Looks like ESPN is also going to bring back some familiar faces Sunday night for NFL primetime. Hey, good, go. Oh, the Chris Berman, Tom Jackson. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as you know, I'm not the biggest Chris Berman fan, and that will be consistent to this day. I thought he sort of had become a caricature of himself on many different forums, and was such an enabler of the NFL, to be blunt. I mean, you know, him interviewing Roger Goodell, you know, was about as tough as me interviewing my three-year-old. That said, I take that back, because my three-year-old is probably a harder interview than Roger Goodell, to be very honest, at this point. But, you know, I think it's great, because as much as I don't particularly love Berman, I would never discount how important that show that he and Tom Jackson did to the NFL landscape. They essentially created the long-form NFL highlight show. Primetime was a great, amazing, fun show to watch in the late 80s and early 90s after those games. He and Tom Jackson had a great rapport, and I've always been a big Tom Jackson guy. I think he was underrated historically for his whole career. He was a very thoughtful voice on so much stuff. He actually, to his credit even, really beat himself up during the Rush Limbaugh stuff, saying that he should have challenged Limbaugh more on the air. So he always struck me as a pretty honorable dude. And so I think it's great. I'm glad to see them back. Tom Jackson, to his everlasting credit, was a guy who walked away from ESPN, didn't give any interviews, just sort of walked out quietly, didn't complain, didn't do anything else, just sort of walked into the sunset, so to speak. So I think it's cool. You know, again, I don't want to be a hypocrite here. I'm not a Berman fan at all, but I think it's great that they're going back on the air, and I'll probably check it out, and good for those guys to get one more show.
Yeah, me too. Small doses, you know. I'll check it out for sure. I'll be going on the Tom Jackson when they do the Vikings. You know, they talk about the Vikings Eagles game. I want to hear Teddy Bridgewater from Louisville. I just want to hear that from Tom Jackson.
That is cool. Yeah,
I got to deal with him a lot. Radio Rows during Super Bowls when I used to go cover the Super Bowls, Richard, and he honestly could not be more of a nicer human being. I mean,
his reputation from everybody inside Bristol was a class act. And by the way, there's a lot of people who love Berman too, you know, inside of there. He doesn't have the same rep as Tom Jackson did, but Tom Jackson is a unique figure at ESPN, and that he really, you know, he's one of those guys where you just did not hear anybody say a bad word about him. There are others in the business, Holly Rowe, Shelly Smith, Dar Spur. You just don't hear, you know, certain people in the business who just like have these reputations where you don't hear people say a bad word about him either on the air or off the air. And Tom Jackson had that rep. So that does not surprise me that on Radio Row during the Super Bowl, he would be a cool dude. That said, you know, let's also be just totally 100% here with the audience. You know, you are promoting him. So in those situations, like whenever I hear, especially a sports media person is a jerk in those situations, it's infuriating because generally speaking, all that's happening is they are getting promoted. So to act like a diva or to act like a jerk usually is the big tell that you are a, I can't say this word on your airwaves.
Yep.
So that's usually a good tell there.
No doubt. You know, we've talked so much about the ratings, especially on the NFL side, the story coming out that the Jets up in your neck of the woods, they're getting rid of certain PSL. I guess it's the I can't remember the exact area, but there's certain areas they're getting rid of public seat licensing fees.
Right.
And they're also going to lower the ticket prices. Do you think this is where things are headed as we're talking about it's tough to get people to show up to really anything anymore? Do you think this is where it's headed?
Well, I think you should raise the prices because it's just such an incredible product when those guys are on the field. I mean, take my money, please. I mean, here. I think especially in a place like New York, the amount of greed that the owner showed when it came to the personal seat licenses and ticket sales is just abhorrent, and I'm glad they're getting it handed to them. Do I think that would bring more people? That's a good question. You know, there's probably smarter business people than me to figure out what is the price point where you can offer something which would get people back into your stadium. The reality is, and this is a big – I think this personally is a bigger issue for the NFL than television, is how do you make the stadium experience better, and how do you make the stadium experience like at least three-quarters as good as the TV home experience? Because the game is really great on television, HD, you know, all these fantasy options. You get to play with your computer. You know, you don't have to walk far for food. You don't have to pay for parking. It's such a great TV game that you really need some incentivizing to get to the stadium. So some of the things that have to be great at a stadium are Wi-Fi, food, sight lines. If you have a family, you can't have knuckleheads in the crowd, and that is an issue for the NFL, in my opinion, in certain cities. I mean, let's just be totally blunt. Like, they have a lot of people who just get liquored up before the game, head inside, and cause trouble. And, you know, on the one hand, if you're like 23-year-old dude and like that might be fun for you to sort of be in that world, but you know, you're a 40-year-old father and mother and you want to take your two kids who love the NFL, you're throwing down a lot of money for a family of four, you know, that is just not a world you want to be a part of. You want to go to a stadium where you feel like, you know, my family could sort of sit here and not have to deal with knuckleheads. And that's something I think the NFL has to clean up in every city. And then when you're talking about, just lastly, like you mentioned, like in places like New York, I mean, they just – that's where their hubris and greed came in. They just basically figured that people want that product so much they'd be willing to pay for a seat license and then after that to pay for actual prices of the tickets for the game. So I'm very glad they got that handed to them because that, you know, that's just egregious to me. That's just really that's corporate greed. Gone wild, but that's the big issue for them, I think, or one of the big issues for them is how do you make that stadium experience close to what is a great experience at home watching the game?
Yeah, and I feel like there's a big difference, Richard, between a lot of college atmospheres and the NFL atmospheres in that way.
100%.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. I'll tell you guys a story. My family went to the Titans-Packers game last year. I don't know why, but my 10-year-old wore his Detroit Lions jersey. I mean, I really don't know why. But, like, drunken Packers fans are, like, screaming profanity at him from the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, I mean it's not enjoyable. I know some places have, like, family sections, but it's hard to, you know, to totally close off from that. But I also don't know how you really, I guess, police that. You're not going to stop selling alcohol. I had a question for you, Richard, on the NFL, on the ESPN bid for Thursday. ESPN, of course, for a long time has had, you know, the college football, and at times really good college football games. On Thursday night. So if they're into this, would that mean, you know, maybe like Fox gets into that? I mean, obviously they can't have both.
No, this is a guess. My guess is that they would do one of two things. They would make that game
the ESPN2 game and try to push the Thursday Night Football package really hard on ESPN2.
Okay.
Or, and I don't know if they could do this, obviously you'd need a college football writer who covers the day-to-day, could the contracts for some of these conferences be shifted where they play Friday night, and then you make Friday night the sort of the ESPN like equivalent of what Thursday used to be? But I think what they would do, and this is an advantage for having the scale they have, is I think they would just shift that to ESPN2 and make that, you know, that package is like sort of big thing. The problem, though, and this is a real one, is if you have the NFL on ESPN and you have college football on ESPN2 at the same time, you're going to kill that college football rating outside of, obviously, the markets that are really interested in that college football game. So you would, you know, you would, in terms of the selling of advertising against whatever viewership number you're promising, that viewership number goes down because just the NFL, you know, sucks up so many viewers. But I don't think that's a bad problem to have. I mean, you know, these guys at ESPN have the benefit of having so many different networks that you can figure out the programming challenges. You know, if you get the inventory, you figure out the other stuff. I think it's just a very interesting story to watch because they pay the most money for the NFL, which is incredible because they have, you know, arguably the fourth best schedule out of the big dogs who are involved in football. And for them to double down on another package is just really, really interesting. Interesting, just given that the NFL historically has kind of screwed around with ESPN's game schedule compared to the NBC's, Fox's, and CBS.
So are we to look at this then, Richard, and conclude that, you know, some of this narrative that we've been talking about, for, especially this year, but really the last couple of years, a little bit overblown on the concerns about the NFL? I mean, obviously down, but still dominant. I mean, does this invalidate some of that?
Yeah, listen, it's a real story. I mean, the NFL ratings are down. You can't, like, that is, unlike fake news, that is real news. They're down, you know, 19%, 18%, 20% over the last 2 years. But what you have to sort of step back is the base that they are coming from is still far and away blowing out everything else on television. 37 of the top 50 television programs in the United States over this calendar year, so from, you know, when I talk to you today in January, you go back to last January 2017, that is NFL programming. Nothing comes close in terms of dominating the television landscape like the NFL. They're still getting paid billions of dollars from the television rights holders, and those contracts continue on until 2021. And once again, they have, for this Thursday night package that they created, which quite frankly can be horrible football, they have multiple bidders on the package. Then finally, if you look, whenever a team is either up for sale or potentially relocating, as we just saw the Raiders do to Vegas, look at what the valuations on the franchises are. So yeah, it's absolutely overblown. The television story is a real issue. And, you know, we could debate till the cows come home as to why that is, between cord cutting, saturation of games. For the life of me, I don't want to hear people continue to say it's because of Colin Kaepernick. That's ludicrous. But, you know, that's a real issue, and that's one they got to figure out. But those who are, like, saying the sky is falling in the NFL, I mean, you know, there was a lot of negative coverage this week about how the games were down from last year. But think about it. An average of 35 million people still watched that Vikings incredible finish. Name one other thing in this country that you can get 35 million people to agree on for a three-hour period. And that's why I think those who sort of question, like, or sort of throw the thesis out there that the NFL is in some free fall, you're just crazy. And then this week you'll see those games are going to be in the 40 million. So even if they're down from last year, again, I would ask people, name one other commodity in this country where you can get 43 million people to do the same thing at the same time. And that's why the NFL sort of continues, in my opinion, to have leverage over the TV networks.
Yep. Well, I'll say this. I do think that they need to work on the atmosphere, because they can't change that, even if the product is still king of the hill or king of the mountain. Because, you know, you just – a lot of these places – I mean, the Titans' last two games of the season were here – and they were a very, very meaningful game against playoff teams, and there were 25,000 empties. That's a problem.
Yep.
I mean, that's a real problem.
I agree.
And to me, Richard, getting rid of PSLs, we're in 2018. The NFL, that's a joke. It's an insult to everybody. Get rid of these stupid PSLs and stop charging people to buy your season tickets. That's ridiculous to have a fee.
I agree with that.
The other thing is the charging people full price for preseason games are ridiculous. Make it $30 lower bowl, $20 upper bowl, whatever. Grow your fan base. Get people that can't afford games on Sundays in the regular season. Get them out to these preseason games, and you might turn them into fans. But charging people full price is a joke.
I agree with everything you just said. That's all well said. The last thing I would say is this. Some of this will turn out to be cyclical, and you have to hope if you're the NFL you get lucky. The league historically, if you just go back to when all of us were kids, or even if you were born in 1989, you know this. How does the league market its games nationally? Quarterback versus quarterback. Manning versus Brady. Staubach versus Bradshaw. Elway versus Aikman. Brady versus Rodgers. That's how the league promotes, which is a smart thing. That's the most important position in football, and it's probably the most famous or important position in sports. What they really need is an influx of young quarterbacks to come into the league who have star power and draw. And if you look at the rosters over the last 2 years, there have been too many games where it is just it's unmarketable quarterback X versus unmarketable quarterback Y. No disrespect to Case Keenum and Nick Foles. Obviously, Case Keenum's had an incredible career, but that is a little bit of the NFL's problem in a nutshell. That is a hard game to promote just on face of the two quarterbacks playing. The NFL will get lucky because so many people will have seen that Vikings last play that I think people are really curious about the Vikings. Vikings could play at home in the Super Bowl, but that's a major issue for them. There are three, in my opinion, there are three quarterbacks playing in the championship game round that are essentially, in my opinion, unmarketable to a national audience, and that is ratings killer. If you flip that and put Manning, Rodgers, Brady, and Philip Rivers. Brees. Trust me on that. That is, to me, a $5 million to $7 million swing up because all those people are household names that a casual fan would have heard of, and that's where I hope the NFL. I shouldn't say I hope. I don't care whatever happens. But if you are the NFL, I think you have to hope that you get for the next 3 to 4 years like Carson Wentz, Jared Goff type. That is, in my opinion, what you really need. You need to find your next level of Brady, Manning, and Rodgers. Because the league, if you look on a week-to-week basis, Tyrod Taylor versus, Nick Foles is not gonna bring some fan in from another city to watch your game.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, good stuff as always. Have a great rest of your week. We'll do it again next week.
See you guys.
Go check out his stuff. Richard Deitch, author of The Media Circus. He also does a great podcast with Sports Illustrated. We'll come back, wrap up the second hour next. Good stuff as always from Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated. Kick off the third hour. We'll head down to Houston, learn a little bit more about Mike Vrabel. He's set to interview today. Titans are getting their interviews cranked up. Weather kind of hampered things for yesterday, but they're going to keep bringing in these guys. I believe Matt LaFleur will be here tomorrow. Today it's going to be Mike Vrabel. Is it Steve Wilkes today? I don't remember the exact
list.
Those
are the first two.
The first two. Vrabel, Wilkes
today. Weather has delayed them, so.
And then I think LaFleur will be tomorrow.
Sounds good.
The Rams guy. So you heard the conversation with Richard at the end about, the Jets story coming out that they're getting rid of certain areas in East Rutherford in that stadium. They're getting rid of PSL fees, okay, which is the biggest joke going in 2018. And they're also going to lower ticket prices.
What does that mean?
It's probably the more expensive. Would it be the more? I don't know. I'm not
sure about
that. I don't
that.
Remember the area.
Yeah, I don't know.
But why it's not the entire
but
stadium,
you're
it should
saying
be.
Tickets that are currently not sold, they are not forcing fans to have to buy a PSL
Correct.
To get season tickets.
Correct.
That's what you're saying.
Well, there's nothing
okay.
you can do about people who have paid already.
Well, that's that to
and that's
me,
where the problem is because they're like, wait a minute, I paid for my
Agreed.
So.
Agreed.
Right. But I still think there's a way you could do it if you were
smart.
Willing to pay some money and incentivize the people for, or make it right with the people that have already paid the PSL fee years and years ago.
You have to, right?
You have to. But I think you could do it without and benefit in the long run by doing that, by starting fresh and being able to just sell season tickets. It's a huge burden to try to get people to pay for a PSL in this day and age.
And there aren't many. There are some places where you can probably still justify it, where you got big waiting lists. You know, Green Bay, fine, because you're clamoring to get into that place.
Does anybody Washington really have the long waiting list anymore, though? Really? I mean, they may still try to pretend like they do, but does anybody really believe?
Not many.
Like, you used to hear, like, right, in New York, right, our list is 20 years long. I mean, it'll take you.
I think in Green Bay, it's
your
probably
kids
true.
Will
Green
have
Bay
to.
Would
you
be,
need to get on the list now for your kids to have a chance. I don't believe any of that stuff still goes
I
on.
I think in New York and Green Bay, a couple places.
Redskins, for a long time, that was the story. Again, but I've thought for a while this is heading that way for pro and college because we, you know, all the things we've just talked about, home theater. The prices have gotten out of control, and I think it
unruly
has to start.
Fans.
Well, there's that, and that's a that's a tougher one to deal with, really. But I think it's going to start going the other way.
But it all factors into why people choose not to spend the money. It is part of it. Well, you know what you said is absolutely true. We've talked to people about that. I mean, who really wants to take their family to an NFL game when you think about the knuckleheads that you may be seated around that don't care, you know, and it's not just the NFL. I realize a lot of markets and sports have to deal with that, but that's also a reason why people choose, if they have that experience, not to go back, because they're like, if I can't take my family, then fine, we'll just stay at home.
And college football has the pageantry and I think like the tailgating, the band, the cheerleaders, like there's more to it that I think is more family friendly. And it's like a lot of people love the things outside the game. The NFL game is pretty much it's the game. I mean, the stadium experience does not have the things that college football does. And it has more, I believe, and at least in most places, of the drunken, violent stuff that you don't want your kids around.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sorry, but I mean, I've been to, you know, Detroit, Chicago. I've been into those stadiums as a fan, and I saw some stuff that, you know, I
you can't even repeat.
I would not have wanted my kids to see.
Right, yeah. You can't repeat on the air.
I think it's actually better here than a lot of places from what I've seen.
I would agree with that. But the college thing is also like a connection. You know, not all people went there, but if you went there, that's a connection you will never have with an NFL franchise, a professional sports league.
Except a team like the Packers or the Steelers. There's a rare few that is truly generational. Like college, but not very many.
The dog pound, you know.
Maybe the dog pound.
They'll show up.
But here's
man.
The thing. That they haven't been. And I don't blame them at all. In fact, I've been saying.
That's a special case.
Why did it take you so long? Because you have the right as a consumer and a fan. That whole baloney, like, you know, you're supposed to show up and support no matter what. Baloney. No.
Not at these prices.
You have the right to tell ownership and front office people and management, you're not good at your job. You get better at your job, and then we'll show up and support. No, you don't owe them no matter what. If you stink at your job, you don't owe them anything. Like, oh, as a fan, you know, you should just show up no matter what. Baloney. Absolutely not. I mean, Cleveland's been beat down the Browns fan base for 20 years. I can't believe it's taken this long. They have finally stopped showing up. They have finally waved the white towel, and it's a shame because that fan base – would be just as rabid as any of the other ones that we would talk about in the NFL if they had anything to cheer for.
Yeah, first sniff of a 5-11 season, they're all back.
But don't give me this crap.
Bless their
You're
hearts.
A fan. You owe it. You know, show up. A real fan would show up. Baloney. You know what? The ownership and the front office and people in charge, coaches, they owe it to you to be good at what they do. They're making millions and billions of dollars. It's up to them to do their job effectively. Don't give me that you owe them something. That's baloney.
Well, and this is where we get into the arrogance that, you know, Richard Deitch was talking about last segment with the NFL. I mean, they did get to a point where it's like, well, people are just going to pay whatever for this product, and you know, that's and now we're seeing that not be the case. So
the other thing is the preseason. Necessary. Preseason.
No, I agree with you so much.
They've got to. The NFL. I mean, here's the thing. If I was the Titans, I wouldn't wait for the NFL. I would just do it. I mean, Arthur Blank didn't wait for everybody else down there with his new stadium. He just said, we're going to lower our concession prices And now I realize it's because other things may have gone up. Yeah. It's a brand new stadium, but
still,
he's got cheap concessions, and he didn't wait for everybody else to do it. He just did it. And to me, if I'm a team, I'm just doing it. Like, I don't need the NFL or everybody else to do it. It's a sham. It's absolutely ridiculous that fans have to pay full price for that crap. It's a glorified practice. If you want to grow your fan base, if you want to grow the experience, you want to get an atmosphere, at least start with preseason and start growing your fan base that way. Make it reasonable where people who can't afford to go on Sundays will go check out your product in August when it's nice. Now, it may be really hot, but, you know, they don't get a chance. But for $20, if they can go check in an NFL game, they may go. But for $80, they're not going.
I totally agree with that. I think the upper deck in every – NFL stadium now, the value is, to me, now everybody might be different, it's $20.
$20.
$20 for the upper deck. I'm not going any higher than that.
Nor should
literally, you.
You
know, but like for a ticket, that's what a ticket should cost up there.
You know what,
compared to sitting at your home, at your house and watching? Why would you pay that much to sit way up in the upper deck, especially if the weather is iffy?
And to your point, there's a chance to bring in some people who otherwise there's no way to come. It's a big picture view. It's short-sighted not to do that. It actually reminds me, maybe there's a hard parallel to draw, but the NHL and the Olympics. To me, I understand you don't want your guys hurt and all that stuff, but I think there's a huge benefit to hockey having NHL guys at the Olympics. I think it's terrible that they're not there this year. And I think it's that is, to me, an example of an opportunity to bring your game to
grow
people.
Your product.
Yeah.
Grow your product.
At the expense of, you know, the bottom line at times. It can pay off.
Joe, good seeing you as always, or should I say Professor Rex Road. Good stuff.
There you go.
We'll see you tonight. Thanks for stopping by and hanging out with us for a couple of hours.
Thanks, guys. See you tonight.
We'll come back third hour. We'll head down to Houston. We'll learn a little bit more about Mike Vrabel. We'll do that next.